Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Right Club. The first rule of Right Club is you don't talk about Right Club, but we'll make an exception in your case.
Teresa. Welcome to Write Club, the podcast for writers and readers everywhere. Today I'm joined by Linda, Pat, Stephanie and Nicola.
Hello!
Hi!
Hi.
This week on Write Club, we'll be talking about sex with author S.A. Mead. Nicola will be sharing her word of the week. We'll be discussing the sticky issue of how to write about sex. And we're going to hear what Steph and Pat are reading at the moment. But first, Linda's going to ask us to
name the novel.
I am. Are you guys all ready?
We are.
Okay. Don't shout it out, remember. Just keep quiet until we get through. First line. It was a queer, sultry summer, the summer they electrocuted the Rosenbergs, and I didn't know what I was doing in New York.
Oh.
Pat's looking all
Yeah,
bright.
I know that.
Yeah, so it rings a bell with me, but I'm not there.
I think I might have got it.
Well, I've got my customary blank expression.
All right, here we go. The American author of this novel, which was lauded as a major work of feminist fiction, committed suicide 1 month after its publication in January 1963.
Ooh.
Oh, Pat looks more puzzled now.
Yeah, I've lost it as well.
Mm.
No? Okay, here's and this should make it clear. Okay. She was better known as a poet, and she was married to a British poet revered in England.
I did get it on the second one. I wasn't convinced until the third one. Sylvia Plath.
The Bell Jar.
I'd Virginia Woolf.
I actually thought it was Zoe Heller to start with, but when you said she committed suicide, that got it for me. I did recognise the opening line as well.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
But I didn't associate it with the Bell Jar.
Yeah.
I thought it was something different than that. But yeah, that's good.
We're all so well read here, aren't we? I'm impressed.
Well, I read anything about mad people.
Well, I'm not sure that I've actually read the novel.
I have.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And apparently her husband, Ted Hughes, was something of a...
He was very well regarded in England,
Well, but he wasn't a very good husband.
There's a lot of dispute still, I think, about how guilty he was in terms of her breakdown.
It had nothing to do with her death, but I think other than just making her extremely unhappy. And she was...
But she had problems before.
She had problems
anyway,
Was the book worth reading?
Well, I think so, just because I think you need to know Sylvia Plath if you're going to be, an erudite person, to use one of Pat's favorite words.
Well, today we're very excited as we have an interview with the novelist S.A. Mead. S.A. Mead lives in deepest Wiltshire with her son, a dog, and two cats. She's partial to gin and tonic and loves to cook. When she's not working, she stares at her laptop and waits for inspiration to strike, preferring that to mowing the lawn or reading. When not parked in front of a computer, she can be found wandering the streets of her village, dog in tow. So S.A. Mead is going to read a sex scene for us, first of all, and then I'm going to ask her a few questions.
Her stomach was in knots and her heart fluttered like a bird trapped in a cage. She found it difficult to follow the desk clerk up the narrow, crooked staircase that led to their room. When Ian closed the door gently behind her, Alina looked around the room. It overlooked the marketplace, which was quiet in the late afternoon. The last of the light fell through the window onto the faded rugs on the floor. An ancient four-poster bed dominated the room. It was piled high with blankets and a flowered coverlet. Ilona trembled, knowing what would happen there. Ian set their cases down on an old chest and drew the curtains, leaving the room flooded with light from the fire. "Are you all right?" His voice was hoarse. Ilona managed a shaky smile. "I'm a bit nervous." He slid the coat from her shoulders. That's to be expected. If it's any comfort, so am I. You are? He held out his hands and she was surprised to see them shaking. You'd think I'd be old enough to know better, he joked. But I won't let that stop me. He drew her into his arms and kissed her with an endearing lack of certainty. I love you, he whispered. His hands crept toward her waist. I love you. She closed her eyes when his lips met the hollow at the base of her throat. She let her hands follow their own path, finding his warm, smooth skin under his jumper. It was unknown territory, and she took her time, feeling him quiver at her touch as they backed awkwardly toward the bed. Ian fell back onto the eiderdown and pulled her with him. His lips never left her skin while he slowly unfastened her dress. He shrugged out of his jumper and shivered when she kissed his neck. She reveled in the scent of soap and his skin. She thought him perfect and continued to explore, drawing gasps when she found his belt and unbuckled it with a sudden wave of boldness she hadn't known she possessed. Minx. He released her from her bra. She gasped when he discovered her breast before lingering there for a while. You are beautiful. He ventured further. His lips followed his fingers as they wove their way down to places that had yet to be explored. Ilona's nervousness fled in advance of his hands, and she found the courage to follow the same path downward until he groaned and tugged at his trousers, kicking them impatiently away, followed by his shorts. She dared to open her eyes, driven as much by curiosity as desire. Her breath caught in her throat while she admired the perfection of him, the way his skin glowed in the flickering light of the fire. She had known what to expect, but giggling half-baked descriptions did not do with the reality any justice. You are beautiful, she echoed. When Ian pulled her toward him until she did not know where she ended and where he began, she surrendered to the feelings that his touch aroused. Waves of heat moved through her. He became all there was as he entered her and cried out against her neck when he began to move. He drew her into a dance that had an entirely different rhythm to any that she had ever known. It all began to make sense, how it was that she loved him and why. He was meant to be there, whispering her name. She held him and followed him into the fire and beyond, drawn out of herself and no longer earthbound. She rose and fell with him until she found release and he collapsed against her with a long, shivery sigh.
Excellent. That was great. It's actually, I mean, it's romantic as well. You know, that's the thing. It's really lovely. And yeah. Well, you know, I love that book anyway. But,
well, it's my favourite too.
Okay, so first of all, do you think books necessarily need to have sex scenes? And do you remember writing your first one?
Well, the answer to the first question is absolutely not. You don't need sex. And really the only reason to include sex is if it advances the plot. Like, for instance, the example I just read, it was their first time, so it was important. The first sex scene I ever wrote was for a very dreary World War One romance which never saw the light of day. It actually was the prequel to A Kestrel Rising, and it took place in World War One, and one of the characters was home on leave, and so Annie, the protagonist of the story, and her lover went into a wheat field.
So yeah, do you think that's quite a good thing that there never was a first one in effect, so that when you were in your published works, wasn't the first time you'd written a sex scene? It's good to
I think the first should never see the light of day.
A bit like boyfriends.
You've had some success writing male on male erotic fiction. How did that come about, Sue?
Well, actually, it came about, I used to belong to an online writers forum called Absolute Rights. And there's a section of the forum which was where you could discuss erotic writing. One of the members posted a writing challenge, which was to write a scene, a sex scene, in a different point of view and different perspective than you usually would write in. Well, I have always written, until that point, third person from a female point of view, so close third. I wrote first person from a male point of view, to men. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got into it. And that scene was, I had to do quite a bit of research because obviously I didn't know much about the basics. that scene, I couldn't, it wouldn't leave me alone. The characters wouldn't shut up. And I ended up writing Stolen Summer.
Right.
Theme.
Yeah, interesting. It's interesting, isn't it, how a challenge can take you somewhere you never thought you'd go. Yeah.
That's it. Never in a million years. And what was funny was I've been trying for ages to get published, you know, sending stuff to agents. My dad's always been quite encouraging. I mean, he read Kestrel chapter by chapter as I was writing it. And I said to him, you watch, Stolen Summer will be the one to get published. And he got this very disapproving look on his face.
But you were right. Yeah.
That was.
Yeah. And so how different is it writing same-sex love scenes? I mean, in the sense that obviously you're not a man and it's something outside of your personal experience.
Yeah, I actually found it quite easy to write. Once I'd done the research and I knew what was involved and read a few books, then it came quite easily.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this is just speculation, but, you know, maybe it's sort of because it's less personal, less embarrassing to write in a way. Is that true? Or?
Yes, that absolutely makes sense.
Okay. So have you always felt comfortable writing sex scenes?
Absolutely not, no. One of the reasons I joined the erotic section of the Writers Forum was to learn how to write sex scenes, because you're always walking a fine line between a biology lesson, insert A into slot B, or completely purple prose, you know, yeah. Trains entering tunnels, fireworks, etc.
Yeah, tricky.
You've got to find that balance.
Yeah, yeah. Is there any other advice that you'd give to a writer approaching a sex scene for the first time?
The best thing I could do, I don't have the link. There's a blog, Sex Writing Strumpets by Stacey Kane, who is a published erotic urban fantasy. She wrote a series of blogs on how to write a sex scene. And the most important advice that I took away from it was to incorporate all the senses. So you're not just concentrating on the physical act, but on what the character whose head you're in is experiencing, whether it's the whisper of the bed sheets, a cool breeze blowing in from the window, how things feel, what they smell.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, thanks very much, Sue.
Okay.
It's a good thing you can't see us blushing.
Of course, especially me. Yeah. I've gone quite peculiar.
You can find links to Sue's work and websites in our Facebook group. Just go onto Facebook and look for Write Club the Podcast. Join the group to join the discussion and like the page for updates of future episodes. So, moving on, Nicola, what's your word of the week? I would say keep it clean, but that's not the way this episode is going, is it?
Well, this is actually a word I chose before I knew what theme of the week was going to be, but it's rather appropriate. It's shenanigans.
Oh, we all like some shenanigans,
it's absolutely.
We?
It's a noun, it's informal, and it means two things, but it can also mean something, you know, to do with what we've been talking about. It's a secret or dishonest activity or manoeuvring. So shenanigans, if you were a con man, for example, and you were trying to rook someone, then you could be doing some shenanigans.
Rook someone?
Yes, that's a good word too, isn't it?
Rook? Yes, I've not heard that before.
It's a card game.
No. I have a poker player.
To fool is to rook. I never knew that. I've learned something.
Oh,
so I might, a new word.
So I might not be able to guess the novel, but I can come up with a word occasionally. And the chairman was accused of financial shenanigans, and it can also mean silly or high-spirited behaviour or mischief, which is where I first came across it. There is someone in my business world who uses the word shenanigans quite a lot in a very mischievous way.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, shenanigans in the sack. That would be quite appropriate, wouldn't it?
Definitely.
Dishonest and...
See, for some reason, the word for me just says fun and mischief and naughtiness rather than anything more sinister.
Yes, so.
It's kind of light-hearted, isn't
heavy,
it?
But, yeah. That's the way I've always thought of it.
And I think nowadays, even if you accuse somebody of financial shenanigans, it wouldn't sound that serious. So it's probably not used so much in that because it's become lighter in meaning.
Right. Mm. Yeah.
We're going to talk now about writing about sex. Linda, have you ever tried to write a sex scene?
Yes, I have.
Ooh.
And it was not really successful. It wasn't at all, as it turned out, because I deleted everything. had I been deleted the history on the computer, because anybody could...
Paranoid!
No, just right.
Because the CIA was after you.
Yeah. But I tried, the scene was to take place in the back seat of a car.
Oh, right.
And I couldn't do it. First of all, I was...
No, I always found the front seat easier.
Yeah, I think so.
Bucket seats. But I, first of all, I was too embarrassed. And secondly, I didn't know what to do with all the knees and the elbows and, you know...
You didn't do your research properly, did you?
Somehow you just find a way.
Well, you know what? If you sit down and try to write about the scene in the back seat of a car, it's going to take you 2 pages just to place all of the...
The limbs akimbo.
They do say you should write what you know, Linda.
So,
you know, if you want to talk about sex, you need to do it. You need to at least have done it in the back of the car.
And you just need to make sure it's not a Jensen Interceptor because they've got leather seats. And if you're wearing leather trousers, then you all just get horribly stuck.
Are you speaking from experience?
I'm afraid I am. I misspent youth in the 1970s.
Excellent. And what about you, Pat? Do you enjoy reading sex scenes in novels?
Do you know, I don't remember reading any sex scenes in novels, but I'm sure I must have.
What are you not even as a teenager?
Yeah, I think I'm going way back, and I seem to remember a phase probably in my sort of mid to late teens where there were certain books that we were all directed to, but obviously, you know, there were only like certain pages of it that you had to bother to read.
Lady Chatterley.
Perfume Garden. Do you remember Perfume Garden?
No.
That was another one. And I certainly have never tried to write.
I mean,
just
in your general reading, if you don't particularly remember any sex scenes, that probably suggests they were reasonably well done. They weren't excruciating and...
Yeah, I'm sure I must have read them.
Yeah.
I think, presumably, they just evolved and, you know, arose out of the situation.
Yeah, quite naturally.
So I didn't feel, oh my God, it's a sex scene.
Yeah.
It's
smacking
me around the head. And...
Well, sex is never just sex, is it?
No.
I mean, sex is part of life and you have conversations in bed and...
Yeah.
Biscuits.
In fact, my dear departed Steve, he used to say, I wouldn't kick them out of bed for eating biscuits. That was one of his favourite expressions.
That's a good one. So, well, I mean... What about you, Nicola? Can you bring to mind any really
good
sex
scenes you've got? Yeah, I mean, thinking about it, it's not something you do come across very often in books, and very rarely so in science fiction. But, you know, my favourite, Ian Banks, did write quite good sex scenes in his science fiction. They were just part of the story, you know, and they seemed quite natural. In my forays into the over the adult section, you know, once I'd read through the children's section of Durrington Library, I did come across various books that made me feel a bit disturbed, if you like. Lady Chatterley's Lover, Cider with Rosie, I remember being particularly sexy. I accidentally stumbled on the Angelique series, which was where she was kidnapped by a Persian prince, and it was 17th century, so she was wearing all the, you know, beautiful gowns and things, but I remember it was pretty much soft porn,
and
the ladies at the desk obviously hadn't read it themselves, or they'd never have been letting me take it out, that's for sure.
They were nice historical novels.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have any qualms yourself about attempting to write a sex scene?
Well, I don't think so, no, but I don't know if it would necessarily, I think it would only be if the story needed it, and I can't actually see how any good story specifically needs a good sex scene. I mean, let me just read you, I mean, I certainly wouldn't be writing one like this, which was the Lady Chatterley's Lover, which now I read it, I can't imagine why it had such a strong effect on me. Then, as he began to move, in the sudden helpless orgasm, there awoke in her strange new thrills rippling inside her. Rippling, rippling, rippling. like a flapping overlapping of soft flames, soft as feathers, running to points of brilliance, exquisite and melting her, all molten inside. It was like bells rippling up and down to a culmination. She lay unconscious of the wild little cries she uttered at the last.
Mm. That's quite well written.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, oh, it's far too much rippling and flapping. And
flapping was slightly uncomfortable.
Of course, at the time, because it was banned and because it was a sensation, it was the thrill of reading something forbidden as well. And, and you know, and an attempt to describe orgasm, you know, which...
And looking back on it, I mean, this was, I mean, a lot of men had access to porn in those days, but I'm not sure how many women would have done. And probably this was a literary work and women were reading it for the first time in the same way that when 50 Shades of Grey came out, you know, you could look up, get on a tube in London and every single woman was reading it. Again, in that, you know, I did read it. My daughter read it first and then she gave it to me and she's gone on to read the subsequent ones, but I couldn't quite bring myself to because the sex scenes were actually really well written. It was the rest of the book that was the problem. I was galloping between the sex scenes.
I was leaving out the sex scenes.
you read 50 Shades of Grey and skipped the sex.
I did. And eye flicking and eyebrows moving, lots of eyebrow body language, not a lot else.
See, surprising. I mean, 50 Shades of Grey is really derided, but it's also credited with giving a lot of women the opportunity to talk about their sex lives and how lacking they are.
I was thinking about the D.H. Lawrence, and you were saying women may be reading this kind of material for the first time, and probably thinking, why am I not rippling?
I was rippling and flapping in my life.
I'm just going to say I refuse to flap.
I don't think parts of you have got any say in the matter if it's any good. But I mean, the book was. I remember being my daughter is 22, and we've always had a very open relationship. But I remember she said to me, "Will you come see the movie with me? Because nobody will come." And I said, "Yeah, all right, then I'll come along." And I remember we sat slightly turned away from each other with our arms folded close to me. It was deeply uncomfortable to watch it with my daughter. The books were hilarious.
I wasn't tempted in the slightest to read it.
Nor was I.
I can't bear
somebody in a
phenomenon.
Book club I was in.
Exactly, it was chosen for book club, and I got nowhere near finishing.
Yeah, and I gave up. Having started to skip over the sex, I then realised it was not much else to the story. And also, I couldn't quite believe that people found that kind of sex erotic, but that's a personal choice.
Yeah, let's not get into that.
Let's not go there. There you go. No, it wasn't for me.
And what about you, Steph? I mean, would you feel comfortable writing about sex, or is it not appropriate in what you're writing
well,
at the moment?
No, they have had sex, and they do have sex. And
in your book, or is it just...
Well, no, I don't... You see, I'm a bit of a waves crashing on the shore.
Yeah.
You know, merchant to the sunset, or light the cigarette and lie back and talk of England. You know, I don't actually want to do anything graphic. So I just kind of talk about brazen kisses and warmth washing over people and that sort of thing. I'm a bit shy. I don't really like sex. Well, no. I don't really like sex. I don't like sex in books.
Yeah. So you don't like reading it,
I don't mind reading it. And I was thinking about when I tell you what's on my bedside table. Actually, there are quite a few sex scenes in this book that I'm reading, but they are very naturally part of everyday life. Mm. They're not a sex scene. They're a scene where people happen to be making love, or they happen to have gone to bed, or there happens to be some passion or what have you.
Yeah,
so I wouldn't say I'd remember this book as a book with lots of sex in it, just about the normal amount of sex that...
And do you feel, thinking about your potential readers in the future, that maybe this, you know, it wouldn't suit them, or is it... I mean, obviously you're saying you're not particularly comfortable writing about sexual self-worth, or that it's not an important part of your book to write about that. But do you feel as well that it would perhaps alienate some readers?
Not necessarily. I mean, if I could do it well, it's just my own squeamishness, I suppose. Yeah. I just feel slightly squeamish about going into details about ripples and
flaps.
Anybody got any examples of bad sex in books or come across anything, because that's the... I remember one...
Do you mean like naughty bad or just badly written?
No, badly written,
historical romance I was reading once, which was set in the Napoleonic Wars. And it was okay, it was all going fine, until mention of the trouser flap. And that just floored me. That's the most unerotic thing I could think of. She's unbuttoning his trouser flap. So,
if you know anything about fashion in those days, trouser flaps.
Yeah, buttons going at the sides and across the top.
Don't you think, but the reality is, you get cramp in your leg when you're having sex, don't you?
Are you back on in your car?
No. I'm just saying that. That's the reality, is it's not always rippling
and there's a lot of molten
feelings.
With good sex, there's a lot of laughter, isn't there? So I think if you could write that, then that would be nice and real. It would relax the reader, and it would also make them able to identify with their own sex life.
Yeah, but there's some horrible stuff that's written. I mean, when people talk about turgid, rigid...
turgid, of course, is a word that's got two meanings.
I mean, there's a bit from The Hormone Factory. I'll read it to you. I unbuttoned my pants, pushing them down past my hips, and my beast, finally released from its cage, sprang up wildly. I started inching my way back up, continuing to stimulate her manually. Sounds like you're servicing a car.
That is a good
Until the beast found his way in, she opened her eyes and said softly, "I'm still a virgin, please be careful." I mean, do you think that's good writing?
No, that's not good writing.
So, that to me is the kind of thing I just really need to keep.
Apart from anything, it's that sort of. Thing about men thinking that, you know, this is a completely separate being to them and it has a will of its own that they are.
And that was written by a woman.
Was it?
That was written by a woman called Saskia Goldschmidt.
Out of the women's league.
It reminded me of a word that I absolutely loathe and that makes me cringe every time I hear it, and I'm afraid you Americans are responsible for it.
Really?
Panties. I hate that word so much.
Pantyhose.
That's different.
Well, what do you call them?
Knickers.
Knickers. Or pants. You can say pants.
Pants and knickers. Or trousers.
Knickers. There's a called Snickers.
We have Snickers as well. They used to be called Marathon. Snickers used to be called Marathon.
What we mustn't do is hide our Snickers in our knickers, though.
Knickers is considered a little bit
common.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, one other thing would be not rude that you have
camisoles.
Underwear. No, camisoles.
Wait,
not really.
Drawers. In historical fiction, then very often you've got drawers or bloomers.
That's how far back you go because they didn't really exist.
Or none. Drawers or bloomers.
The 1920s was when proper underwear was invented by Chanel. Coco Chanel.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But not everybody.
No, the bra was invented by a German. Was it?
Really?
I think.
Thank God for that.
Yes! And I remembered. I mean, I don't know whether this is apocryphal or what, but as far as I'm aware, the bra was invented by a German, and his name... I can't remember his first name.
Otto.
What his surname? Was it Otto?
Brazier.
Chipslinger.
Yeah. No.
I'm sorry, Pat, but I was reading something recently. Actually, I was reading a book which I'll find the link called The Joy of Quiz. And this was more or less invented by the inventors of Trivial Pursuit.
It's a myth. Thomas Crapper.
It's
a myth. It's
one of those. That's the lovely story.
Other horrible words are springing to my mind. Another one I hate is quim.
Oh, that's my favourite Scrabble word. I'm always trying to get my quim on the board.
Oh, my God.
Moving on. We'll tell you later.
Ladies' bits.
Okay. Well, that's almost the end of this week's show. But before we go, there's just time for Pat and Steph to tell us what they're reading at the moment. So, Pat, I'm not sure I dare ask what's on your bedside table. I'm hoping it's a book.
Well, Teresa, you're in luck. Phew. Yeah. Though it is called Exposure.
Okay.
Exposure by Helen Dunmore. And it's actually a spy novel, but it is also a love story of sorts, and there is a little bit of sex. Rumpy Pompey.
Shenanigans.
Oh, I love Rumpy Pompey. I love Rumpy Pompey. Yeah. That's great fun. But it's a fabulous book. Mixes the domestic with the political. And it's set in London in 1960 when the Cold War was at its height. It starts off, two colleagues work in MI6. And at the outset of the novel, Giles has an accident which leaves him unable to return a top-secret file to where it should be. He calls on his friendship with Simon, who he's known for many years, but is in a much more junior position to him. He calls on him to help him by returning this file to where it should be, though it has to be done very secretly. Unfortunately, in between him being able to do that, somebody else appears on the scene, and without telling him, Simon's wife Lily buries the briefcase deep in the earth at the end of their suburban garden. And she believes that in doing that, she's protecting the family. All the elements of classic espionage thriller are there. You know, mysterious men in dark raincoats, obscure references, uncertainty about who's on which side, and so on. But there's a very human element to it as well, because of the complex characters. You know, this is a well-written novel. Mm-hmm. It's not just a spy story. Mm-hmm. The depiction of 1960s London is full of convincing detail, and it creates really well that sense of the paranoia that there was at that time because of the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I liked Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, mm-hmm. and a couple of those, and so you yeah. get that same sort of feel.
Yeah.
But you get a sort of slightly more literary depth
mm-hmm.
to the book mm. as well. A little quote I thought was good from the Sunday Telegraph. It says, like many of the best spy novels, Exposure sets out to unsettle Britain's view of itself. Yeah. Nice book. I haven't quite finished it. I'm well on the way with it. And it's good. Well worth the read. And I've just sort of put Birdcage Walk, which was her final novel. You know, she died in June.
Right.
This year, and apparently a collection of her poetry is the poetry she wrote in the final few months that she was, you know, she'd had a diagnosis, is on the shortlist for the Costa Literary Awards, apparently.
Yeah. Okay, so thanks, Pat. Moving on, Stephanie, what's on your bedside table?
Well, a cup of tea that's gone cold, but several books, one of which I'm really enjoying. It's called Everything I Never Told You. It was the debut novel of Celeste. I don't know how you pronounce her name. It's spelled NG, her surname. I suggest it's Ng or Ng. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Celeste Ng. Ng. The book opens in 1977, and which is my kind of era. And it opens with the line, Lydia is dead, but they don't know that yet. Mm-hmm. And it's the story of a teenage girl who has gone missing. She hasn't come down for breakfast. And the unravelling of the family after they discover that her body's found in a lake near the house. And then the story starts to go back. The narrative jumps back to her parents, who were at Harvard University, against the odds. So two very clever, erudite, to use the word, two very, very clever people, against the odds, made their way to Harvard, met and fell in love, somehow made this terribly weak family. It seems to me Marilyn, the mother, when she got pregnant accidentally with Lydia, she gave up her career and all her dreams and her aspirations. Father is James. He's actually Oriental. So there's a lot of prejudice against him in 1955. And he ends up working at a much lesser place than his intellect should have let him. And it seems to me that that the mother in particular is sort of living her life vicariously through Lydia and putting Lydia under lots of pressure. And Lydia has a younger brother and sister, and the brother is quite resentful of Lydia and so on. So it's the kind of dynamics of the family. It's beautifully written. It's poignant. It's believable. It's there is some sex in it, but as I say, it doesn't jump out at you because James and Marilyn have sex early in their relationship, obviously, because she got pregnant. No, it's lovely. It's my kind of story. I love the characters. I love the kind of roller coaster of emotions. I just really want to know what happens. Really, really enjoying it. So that would be my book. Yeah. And there'll be a link, obviously, on our Facebook
page. There will. Thanks, Steph. Okay, that's all we have time for. So thank you once again for listening to Write Blood, the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to iTunes or Stitcher, so every new show is automatically delivered wherever you want it. Join our Facebook group, Write Club the Podcast, and if you've enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.